and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Here is Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. Sweet Over Melissa, second on the inside. Not a Peep is third. Alkalina is fourth. They're in the final furlong. It's Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. Who won by a half a dozen lengths? Aquilina was second, Sweet Over Melissa third.
All right, we'll tie in that race replay in just a moment, but let's kick off today's Friday edition of Racing Across America. It is New York Showcase Day, Traverse Eve. Right now, a gorgeous day. They're talking maybe some showers later this afternoon. We'll keep our fingers crossed, though. On today's Racing Across America, as always on a Friday, a visit from the folks at the Saratoga Special. Today it's our friend Tom Law. We'll do a little review and preview and see what's up with the special. A little bit later on, Rich Cristiano from Adelphi Racing. We'll talk about some horses they have coming up and just the Adelphi Racing partnership and more. But top of the show, we'll talk a little breeding, a little horse ownership, because he has one in the West Point this afternoon. And he was the breeder of the horse you just saw coming down, one of the one of YouTube's favorite race calls by Tom Durkin. It's Ed Messina, breeder, owner, member of NYSLA. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Seth. Nice to meet you.
What are your memories of Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Sol, Ti, Da?
I love it because I downloaded Durkin's call. And I have it as my alert on my phone.
Excellent.
And every time he hears it, he says 5 cents. He wants a royalty.
That's very good.
No, she provided some memorable moments for us, and it was quite thrilling, yes.
And you were the breeder, right? And she won a New York Bred Award, and that
she
led to...
She was champion two-year-old in 2008, yes.
And you have also been New York Breeder of the Year a few times as
correct.
Well, right?
That is correct, yeah. I have about 8 or 9 horses that were nominated for championship status in the New York Bred program. And Do, Re, Mi managed to break through because she won a great at stakes.
Yeah, and again, one of the all-time great calls by Tom Durkin.
So when I was a consultant, rather than doing homebreds, I have 25 horses that were nominated for championship status, and a bunch of them became champions.
Excellent. Yeah. And I wanted to talk a little breeding today, and we'll do that in a little bit more. Did you have your own farm, or were you...
No, I always bought it at places. I knew people for 25, 30 years. I always investigated the farms and the people before I sent my horses there. And I had relationships for a long, long time. Given the fact that I'm kind of elderly now, when I met those people, they were in their 50s. Most of them are gone, but I still managed to survive.
Well, you look great.
I think it's the game that keeps me going.
Yeah, no, you look great. Are most or all of your horses New York breds?
I tried to breed through the New York Bred program, absolutely, and support it. And so for the last 20 years, they've all been New York Breds, without a doubt.
Talk a little bit about the New York Bred program and how it's evolved over these, you know, past 20 years or so. We were talking, because it is New York Showcase Day, Anthony and I can remember the days of Fiorito breaks through the gate, wins the Whitney, and that was kind of, to me, the breakthrough for the New York Breds. But going back and comparing those days to these days in the New York Bred program, it's night and day.
Absolutely. The quality of the individuals that are being produced has grown enormously. They can compete in graded stakes races. If you look at the race I'm in today, some of those horses have won graded stakes, but there are many New York Breds that have done very well in graded stakes company and listed company. Yes.
You have a website called Dr. Pedigree, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited to talk a little bit, because I said when you sat down, we don't talk too much about breeding here on the program. It's more, you know, handicapping. We're talking to trainers and whatnot. But I think it's a fascinating side of the game. And I think, particularly with the turf racing up here, I think the more people can know about breeding, the better their handicapping can be. Would you agree with that aspect?
I would agree with that, because I've collected several bets on the Kingmans that have run here because most people don't know about him. He comes from Europe. And the Sons of Invincible Spirit, who are very good at on the turf. And, of course, Galileo, who's unbelievable, that has had some sons win here. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the theory behind breeding. And again, you know, from what I know, there are the matchups and the crosses and whatnot, and there's a whole, you know, vernacular to breeding that I find a little bit interesting. But talk a little bit about the science of it as opposed to the luck of it, because I always think of, there was President Jimmy Carter, and then there was Billy Carter, and they had the same parents. So, again, talk about the science of horse breeding as compared to how much is just luck of winding up with a really special horse.
Well, it's interesting that you bring into the science, because I have a PhD in medical sciences, and I taught medical school for about 60-some-odd years. And I brought that approach into my breeding theory, which I now have operational for myself and for many years for clients. There are several that are operational. There's inbreeding, there's line breeding, there's dosage, and there's nicking. No one does family analysis, and no one does a look into the statistics that are associated with success. And there are two levels of success, one in the reproductive arena, which is the breeding, and two in the performance. Performance determines a lot in terms of selecting animals that you want to retain for breeding purposes. What I found is that I sort of make history, but those other methods duplicate history, and that's why I'm kind of unusual. My mentor for learning pedigrees was P.G. Johnson, so I want to give him some credit for that, because when I first met him as a vitamin salesman trying to work my way through school, he said, "Son, that ain't going to work here if you enjoy the horses." And I said, "I do. I'd like to be very close to them." He says, "Well, you should learn something about pedigrees." And he got me started on computerizing and generating an algorithm, which I use today. It's a statistical approach, but it's one that served me very well.
You mentioned dosage, and I know when I first got into the game, I can remember you get to the Kentucky Derby, and everybody would look at that dosage numbers, and that's kind of faded away on the handicapping side of things now. Still important on the breeding side of things?
Absolutely not. Because if you look at Rich Cream that won the Belmont Stakes, he had a dosage index of some over 30. This was a system developed by Colonel Villiers, you know, and it has been disproven by, I think his name was Mark Simon, who used to ride for the Blood Horse. He did a very extensive study, and it really doesn't, there's no purpose to it, actually.
Yeah, as I say, it was something when I first got into the game. The Derby was the big thing. People would look at the dosage, and there was the dosage and the index. There was the subsequent index number too, and I forgot what the terminology.
Well, the dosage index was the key thing.
And then you put those two, which is, as I say, faded away.
But it was
a little bit
artificially constructed, because it was determined by a group of individuals that decided who was the sprinter and who was the router, and you wanted to get a balance of that and get the appropriate dosage index.
And now that you mention
and there was bias in that.
Yeah, they would tweak it depending on who won the Derby that year. All of a sudden, it would get tweaked.
When it didn't work, they had to tweak it so that horse qualified.
You know, you mentioned P.G. Johnson, and as you kind of got, what got you into the game? What made you a fan of horse racing?
Well, first of all, as a young person growing up in Coney Island and during the war, I first saw horses that came through the streets. The Borden horse that amazed me, because as the guy delivered the milk and the butter, the horse moved to the next spot. He had memorized the route. And so the man never had to go and deal with the reins and guide the animal. And the other was, of course, during the war, when they were collecting aluminum, there was a junkyard horse that dragged a wagon, and they solicited the aluminum from the women. And then as I got a little older, my father decided, the war was over, we go to Coney Island for entertainment. And I was still young, but he could give the guy a nickel, and I got two turns around the pony track. But the man had to hold me in the saddle. So I fell in love with horses very early in my life. One day, my father takes me to Jamaica Racetrack, and I discover thoroughbreds. And when I hear the noise that they generate with their hooves hitting the ground and the movement of wind, of the air, that generated this rushing noise, it just fascinated me. And I told my father, I want to have one of those one of these days. And you know what? I was very fortunate. I was able to do it.
Yeah. So did you become an owner and then kind of branched out to do the deep dive into breeding?
I first became a consultant after I had developed my technique with the guidance of PG. PG taught me about confirmation. So then I was purchasing animals and designing matings for both his owners and for his family as well. And we were starting to have a lot of success. And then my consultant end of it started to grow. That afforded me the possibility of buying my first mares for $2,500 and $5,000. And I'll tell you a little secret about that, why I was successful with those horses and having horses nominated for championship status. Two of the things that I found that were very important in breeding and selecting animals is soundness and consistency. Because if I had soundness and I had consistency, now in two areas to consistency, one is reproductive consistency, and I'll get to that a little bit, and the other is performance consistency. I could get quality out of it if I designed the appropriate mating. And I was shocked that it was so simple in the early days and why no one discovered that. So the consistency in reproductive is a little difficult because what you have to do, as I analyze families, you have to see what the brood mares have produced. Did they produce 10 foals? How many of them got to the races? How long did they last at the races? That gave me a baseline for saying, as a person that could ill afford buying horses or breeding horses, I needed something that was going to have longevity and potential performance on the racetrack with longevity. And so that was my key to understanding pedigrees and designing matings.
Yeah, because, you know, for folks who are breeding, it's there's a lot of patience involved, obviously. You have to wait for the gestation, then the horse to get to the racetrack, and if your horse doesn't get to the racetrack...
If you're an impatient person, you don't want to do breeding because it takes 3 years.
You know, it can pay off, and particularly with, again, the New York bred program, it can pay off very handsomely, but you do have to have that patience, and if they don't make it to the racetrack. So, yeah, reproductive consistency, I think, would be kind of a major thing to do. So you mentioned computerized. I'm guessing that technology helped you, you know, develop everything.
What PG gave me was a gift that no one else probably could get today. He had every thoroughbred record, thoroughbred times, and blood horse in the basement of his home. And he showed me what a pedigree looked like. He opened one of the pages, and there was the four-generation cross. And he said, could you input this in a computer and do something with it? I said, of course. I said, hasn't anybody done that before? He says, I think so, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Do it. Let's see what happens. So I started it, and I made a mistake because I was really centered on brood mares first. And I couldn't find any patterns to emerge because there's 3 folds, 5 folds, 6 folds. So I told PG, I'm not having any success. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking at brood mares. He said, no, go with stags. They have 1,000 folds or more, and you might find a pattern or a trend. It was his guidance that actually led me to studying stallions, and that's where I had my first breakthrough. And then learning from the stallions, I transferred some of that information into analyzing brood mares, and then it started to come together.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about how you then decide which sires and which brood mares are going to make the best, you know, and families that will wind up with the best, you know, produce.
Right. Well, my algorithm helps me from a statistical standpoint, okay? For instance, if I want to buy a brood mare, I want her to have a standard starts index above 1.4. That's a very readily available to anybody that reads the blood horse or goes to websites.
Sure.
Where that information is. So I like that as a starting point because that means that animal is 40% above the normal breed average. Then what I want to do is statistically see for made stallions that they have a percentage of stakes winners that's above 3% because that's the breed average. So if you're dealing with the breed average, you want to be above.
Sure.
That. So my threshold is around 5%. So if I could afford it, I'll do it. The other statistic is the average earning index that was generated by a gentleman that was an editor of the Blood Horse. And I use that. And there's a modification to it now, a more modern one. But I use that statistical analysis because what I want is a stallion, a made stallion, to have an AEI that's somewhere above 7 or 8. And that tells me that they have earning power, and the statistics with regards to stakes indicates that they can produce quality. On the broodmare side, I use the standard starts index, and I use the soundness and consistency that requires studying each individual broodmare by themselves. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about over the years, because you say you play in the New York Bred program, horses that maybe stood out either on the, you know, the sire or the dam side. I remember, as I say, I go back to Fiorito and whatnot, and one of the ones that always used to strike me, and now they're getting bigger names here in New York, but one that was a bona fide, really a New York kind of level, was Scarlet Ibis, who
stood out for me. The Cormorant, you're talking about.
Being a nice sire.
Yeah, he was. He was one of the ones that really broke through very early in the program and had some decent success. And he came from the Rebo line. So that was a very powerful stamina influence in New York, which had a lot of broodmares that were more speed-oriented. So it was a wonderful balance and a wonderful mix. That's another component to designing matings also. I try not to design matings that are going to produce sprinters.
Okay.
Okay? One, because sprinters don't usually have a longevity on the racetrack that owners should have. And routers seem to last longer. Look at my horse. 22 starts, 14 times in the money, and he's a five-year-old now. So that longevity I enjoy, and an owner should enjoy, because there's a possibility of a return on investment.
Yeah.
Either to break even or to make a little bit of a profit. And that's my other motivation. There has to be a business program that's associated with the management of horses.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, you will long-term lose a lot of money.
Yeah, it makes sense. And some of the other names, either on the sire or the mayor side, that maybe have stood out to you over the years.
Well, Freud was the standout.
Yeah.
Distinctive Pro was right there alongside of him. So that's going back a while, too. Yeah. So there were some very decent stallions that came to New York. Enswell was pretty good and belonged to me. He did so well that they took him away from New York. In fact, that's the trouble. Sometimes the money, you know, from Kentucky causes some of our best stallions to leave, and that's unfortunate because we need them to remain in to produce the quality. And to draw quality mares into the state.
Yeah, Central Banker currently.
Well, Central Bank is doing a very good job for us, and Joe McMahon, I give credit to him for having found that horse and getting good usage out of him.
Yeah. Are you still doing the consulting, and where can people find the information?
Well, my website is number one.
DrPedigree.com
if they want to find me. I've been doing more of the homebred stuff. Because everybody that I met when I was 30 years old was 60 years old, and unfortunately they passed on, and I'm now 86. So consulting is something that I put in the backside because I'm doing more of my homework.
Sure.
But I'm the kind of person that wants to help anybody. Anybody asks me a question, I will give them the answer, and if they want, I'll design a mating for them.
Yeah, and as I say,
or find a horse for them.
A lot of people probably don't look at that side of the game as closely as maybe it is worth taking a look at. We've mentioned it already a couple of times, and let's take a look. We talked about it just earlier on the handicapping show. You do have one in today, Sanctuary City, who is a homebred, as you say, a five-year-old, 22 starts. He's been in the money 14 times.
Correct.
I'm going to pull up a replay. We're going to look at last year's West Point. Sanctuary City is going to run third in here. Behind City Man and Therapist. They're both back in this afternoon. Give us some thoughts on Sanctuary City. How's he coming into the race, and what are your expectations this afternoon in the West Point?
These horses that we're running against are very good horses. They're probably the finest New York breds to run on the grass, and I'm very fortunate that Sanctuary can compete with them. But he has a very difficult style of running for most riders. He likes to break, get up close to the pack, but then he wants to take back a little bit. He wants to see the horses. And then you have to urge him to work your way. And the key for him is you got to start your move at the 5/8 pole. But some jocks have waited until the 3/8 pole, and it's not enough time for him to gain on the leaders that are 5 lengths, 10 lengths. And so if you see in the stakes races, he loses by 2 or 5, or if he doesn't get the appropriate bride, he's 4th. That's why 14 times out of 22 he's in the money. And a winner many times. He's a very lovely animal. When I designed the mating and I consulted with my friends, they said, who are you breeding this mare to again? I said, I'm going to Temple City. What are you going to a $5,000 stallion for? This mare deserves more. And I'll give you a little history about the mare, because she's a daughter of a mare that I bought in Kentucky. I went and bought a mare and spent more money now because I had consulted and earned some money. I was a commercial breeder for a while, having sold Do Re Mi, put a little bit of money in my pocket because the Moors raced her, but I bred her. And so I went for a mare. And after seeing 100-some-odd mares that I had culled from my original list that were attractive to me pedigree-wise, I ended up with what my son called a very ugly mare. And why did you buy her, Dad? And he happens to be here today watching this, and so he's going to laugh about this story. And I said, you know what? Pretty soon she's going to be the prettiest mare you ever saw in your life. And so under her pedigree, there were no stakes horses. But she produced Fortunate Damsel, who was Group 3 winner. She produced Do Re Mi, who was a Group 2 winner. And she produced Considerate, who was a listed stakes winner here at Saratoga. And I retained her as a daughter from Considerate Dunn. Considerate Dunn, the mayor that started this family, stood this way, okay? That's why he didn't care for her. So why did I make that decision? Because I didn't see genetics playing a role in the phenotype of this particular mare.
Okay.
It was mismanagement. But it had the elements of the families that I wanted. And I said, with my methodology, I could probably get quality out of this mare, because that, what I'm seeing on the ground, is mismanagement. And if Mother Nature abides, I'll get a decent horse. And so I've made that entire family from that ugly mare. It's unbelievable. Yeah,
I like that.
And so now my Kentucky friends have to eat cake.
I like that. Very good. How many horses do you have running now?
I had 3, but I'm down to 1 because, okay, as in this game, things happen.
Yeah, no.
But one of my horses got cast in a stall and did damage to his cannon bones. He was out. The other guy I sold because he couldn't outrun me. And that's the other thing that makes breeding such an exciting and challenging exercise, because you could have the confirmation, you could have the pedigree, you could have the mating, but the horse needs to have the courage and the heart and the will to race. Sanctuary is not a perfectly conformed animal, I'll tell you that. And he gives you everything he can and puts his heart out there on that track every time he runs. And that's why I so admire thoroughbreds. They overcome their minor little conformational faults, and they give you everything they can give you.
Yeah, that's what I hear a lot from the folks that sit here, the jockeys, the trainers, the owners, and
the
whatnot.
Only perfect horse I ever saw was go close to perfect was both Buck Passer and Secretary. Those two had really ideal conformation that you would want in an animal. And that's rare in our business.
Yes, yeah.
You know.
Before I let you go, I just have to ask, you know, you've talked now about being in the game for years and years and coming from downstate. What has Saratoga meant to you over the years?
Wow. I might end up crying, so I apologize for that. But I came as a young child with my family. My father enjoyed betting horses, so that's how I got to know about horses after a while. When I was older, I found that out, but when I was a youngster. And my wife and I, my wife loved horses. I met her because of horses. And had she survived, it would have been our 60th year as a couple here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I lost her last year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And the memories with her and Saratoga, to me, it's a very, very special place. And when we came in the early days, when all of our parents were alive, I had my mother, my father, her mother, her uncle, her 2 sisters, the 4 kids, my son, and I had to rent a house for 20, 30 people. And then it got so expensive, I decided, let me buy an absentee ownership condo here so we could come up and I wouldn't have to put that money into renting a home. But that's the way it was in the early days. You know, you could rent a home for $5,000, then it became $10,000, then it was $20,000. I said, this is getting ridiculous, you know. All that money I was making from consulting and everything else was going to home rental to be in Saratoga. Yeah.
Yeah, you aren't alone with that aspect. But again, it's been fun to have you come in and talk a little bit about breeding, because as they say, we don't talk about that a lot, but it's a very obviously important aspect of the game. And I think just from a handicapping side, I think if folks become a little more attuned to that, it helps the handicapping as well. Ed Messina, drpedigree.com. Again, breeder, owner, NYTHA member. We appreciate the visit. We wish you a lot of good luck this afternoon and going forward, and appreciate the visit.
We'll need a good trip and a little bit of luck, but he tries hard. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection in one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised earlier, joined now by Rich Cristiano from Adelphi Racing and much more we'll talk about as well. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Great to be back on Capital OTB after a five-year hiatus, I guess.
Yeah, you were talking before we went on the air, you would be a regular with Tom and Nick, going back to the day, as it were, and Tom actually reached out and when you kind of just recently kind of hooked up with Adelphi, right?
That's correct. Yeah, Tom and I now are good golf buddies. We play golf every week, so we're very good friends. And yes, I was retired for the last 5 years, and I know Matt from, well, I'll tell you the whole story if you like, real quick.
Yeah.
Back about 15, 16 years ago, Matt was looking to buy his first horse. And at the time, I'm
the head of Adelphi Racing.
Yes, Matt Couture. And so he's looking to buy his first horse years ago. And I'm working at the time with West Point Thoroughbreds. And so I'm looking to sell him a horse. And the only horse we had left, I'll tell you who it was in a second. But he decided to go buy a couple of horses with Sovereign Stable. He went in that direction and got two really nice horses. But the horse that he decided not to buy was Awesome Gem, who only made about $2.8 million. So. But he loves to tell that story, and it is a great story. So then, so now flash forward 2009, I joined Sovereign Stable to work with them. And so Matt was a very good client of mine for 5 or 6 years. And how I define a good client in this business for being an owner is if you have patience, because you have to have patience on the ownership side as opposed to the gambling side, and you take bad news very well, because that's what happens in this game as an owner. And so Matt was seriously a top client of ours. And then his business was doing very well, and so he started branching out on his own, bought horses on his own with a couple of buddies of his. And then I guess it was last November, I'm listening to a podcast, and there's Matt Couture talking about Couture Racing and the newly formed Adelphi Racing Club. So I met him down in Florida at Gulfstream this spring, and I had showed him a video. My son works for Fox, a 17-year-old works for Fox and I are on the production team. He produced some nice stallion videos up here. So I showed him to Matt, and he said, geez, I need some new commercials for the Saratoga meet, and put them together, and they started, he made two nice, really nice commercial spots for him. So then, being up here at Saratoga, I met with Matt a couple of times and talked about his program, and it really appealed to me the way he structured his program. It was very unique. And So I decided, we had a couple of meetings and decided to come out of retirement, and I'm in semi-retirement. He really hired me as an advisory role, and it's been going great for the first two or three weeks. So,
yeah, and it, you know, you've been again involved with some of the partnerships on the business end and acquiring clients and whatnot. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But I was listening to a podcast you did fairly recently, and at the story you relayed, your first store with West Point, I thought, take us through the beginning of that to the end of the
absolutely.
Story becomes even more funny.
It's a true story, and it shows you what can happen to, in this game, you know. So I came up to here in 1998 to a TOBA seminar, New Owners Seminar, and Cot Campbell was the speaker at that. And as you know, he's a pretty smooth dude. God rest his soul.
And Dogwood was essentially the pioneer for
Absolutely. Yeah. He developed the whole concept. Yeah. So anyway, we went for 2 days, my wife Jane and I, and I was ready to just write the check. I was so excited because I didn't think I could afford to own a piece of a racehorse, but I realized, right? So, but my wife says, she was saner than me, and said, no, you're going to do your research like you would do for any project, business, or whatever. So I spent a year interviewing the principals of West Point, Dogwood, Cot, Team Valor, Barry Irwin, and then some smaller New York operations. And then after a year, we came up, it was 1999, end of the meet, and we're at Pat Burns Barn with Terry Finley. And Pat takes out this beautiful, huge, black Colt New York bred. And I said, wow, I go, I'm kind of getting ready to get into the business, but I guess that one's sold out because he's running on Monday. So sure enough, he goes, no, Rich, if you want, you know, you can take 5%. So Jane gave me the nod, and we went ahead and bought 5% of Scottish Halo. So that Monday, he runs in a New York bred maiden special, his debut, and big field, and he goes to his knees at the break. Shane Sellers almost falls off the horse. And then he gathers himself up, circles the field, and wins by six. And he just draws off, right? So now, in the winner's circle, Shane Sellers was up, and Terry had told him that I was a little pumped up for this race. And in the winner's circle, if you watch the video, even today, you can see he's pointing at me, and he goes, we got you now, sucker. And he was right. I mean, I was absolutely hooked, Seth. And then we ended up buying, you know, a few horses with Terry. But so the postscript to that story, though.
The postscript is.
This is the real
funny.
It is. So now that was like on a Monday, and now we're coming up to Labor Day weekend and all this. And so I'm working on Wall Street at the time. I get like 10 pizzas, invite all the executives into the conference room, show the race on the big screen. Everybody's cheering. Then I go back to my desk, and there's a phone call. It's Terry Finley. He goes, Richie, I got some great news for you. I go, what's that, Terry? He goes, well, you can vote your 5%, but we got an offer three times what you paid for him last week, and so we're going to sell Scottish Halo. So I just stare at the phone. I'm going, well, what's the good news? You know, you told me not to get into the business to make
money.
I know. I was like, no, you told me to get into business not for money, because you can't make money in this. I don't care about that. I want my horse back. So true story.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
Then Scottish Halo ended up being a really nice horse, but I've learned since I was a rookie, and you got to take the money off the table in those situations most of the time. And he ended up being a nice horse. He was actually on the Derby trail at one point, but and then he got hurt, but he came back and won that big New York Showcase Day race in that following fall. Nice horse, but it was a great. I mean, talk about getting hooked, right?
I
was coming to Saratoga since 1980 as a fan, and to be in the winner's circle, my first start was, I mean, very emotional day.
That's great.
It really was.
That's great though, because don't get in the money, get in for the fun. Triple your money in a week, and it's like, wait a minute, that isn't what I signed up for.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I'm sure he still tells that story.
Talk a little bit about, because you've alluded to it already, you know, speaking of partnership and what people should expect, and I would guess you would recommend doing what you did, because there are all kinds of partnerships at all kinds of levels. So do your research, and if people are thinking, I'd like to get into the game, what are the things they should think about and know?
Seth, that's a great point. Back in the day, we had the big long accounting sheets with my pencil, and I had, you know, all things like markups, how much they mark up the horse, ongoing expenses, how they communicate with you, race day protocols, what can you expect, as you know, all that neat stuff. And I, you know, and just had a big spreadsheet and kind of compared notes of what was important to me. So I would suggest to you, to anyone who wants to get to the business, do exactly that. What is important to you? Do you want to go to the barns in the morning? Do you know, how important is that? I've had partners who never went to a race in their life, just watched it remotely. So what's important to you? do your homework. And then most importantly, what I did is part of that research I didn't mention, I called clients of West Point and Team Valor and all those, you know, those companies to talk, how was your experience so far, you know? And so that's what I would recommend.
And again, a lot of what a partnership is about, particularly up here at Saratoga, it's a social aspect too. Saratoga, I know, just being here where we are in the backstretch in the morning, you see a lot of the partnership people from the various partnerships going back, and it's just, it's a great social activity and social atmosphere to be involved in a partnership and the other partners and go in the paddock and come to the backstretch, and as I say, particularly up here at Saratoga.
I can't tell you how many people I've introduced to the game that were, you know, were gamblers and then got into the ownership side, and they've told me flat out the most, the best part of their day now at Saratoga, coming out here in the morning on the backstretch and enjoying with their families and the kids and all that. And multiple clients of mine have said that over the years, and they still go to the races and gamble, but they said their favorite part is coming out in the mornings and enjoying that.
Yeah, and as I say, we see it all the time. Yeah. Folks can go to the website and find more, or if they see you around the racetrack, they can ask you.
Absolutely. I'm out every morning, you know, walking around backstretch here in Oklahoma. Most of our trainers are in Oklahoma, and it's AdelphiRacing.com. Yeah.
And I'm going to try to get Matt on next week because I told him early in the meet I was going to have him on. An interesting backstory and getting into the game and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does have – he has quite a story himself about
Just want to hit before we let you go on a couple of runners. Go back to August 4th. We're going to look at starter allowance. Miss Domina is going to be the number seven horse here and win. But Misspelled Moon, I love this, Misspelled Moon with three O's, the 1A, is an Adelphi horse. Just talk about this performance. You know, nice second up at Saratoga. Nothing to shake your hat at.
Yeah, you know, actually, I'm still trying to get to know. I was only on board for about 2 weeks here, so I'm starting to get to know all the horses. I guess we have about 13 or 14 under the Adelphi umbrella, and Matt still owns like 20 to 20 something horses on his own or with a partnership, but yeah, anytime you run well at Saratoga, you're happy with it, and we're looking forward. I'm sure you're going to bring up this filly we're going to run today.
Yeah, today we'll take a look at a replay of Belmont Maiden Special Weight event. This was the first start of the career. Funny How is going to run third behind Sweet Mystery and Valuse. Funny How, we mentioned it earlier, obviously a reference to Joe Pesci and Goodfellas, for folks who have seen that movie. But comes out of a, you know, this is a nice debut effort and a nice third. Comes back in State Bred Maiden Special Company this afternoon up here at Saratoga. What are your expectations today for Funny How?
She never stopped running in that race. That was a really nice debut. You know, she drew the rail in that race, and that's tough for, as you know, for a baby. She had a three-year-old, but first start.
Sure.
So then, since then, coming up here, she just flourished. I guess that big work two back was a phenomenal. What was it, second best of 88? Yep. But it was in company with a really nice performer in Ray Handelsbaum. I think it was Mischievous Diane, and just gave her everything, you know, everything she wanted, head to head the whole way around, and galloped out strong. And then I was at that Maintenance Breeze last week, very nice, reaching out, did it comfortably. So we're really expecting a move forward today, to be honest with you. Now we have the unknown factor of the weather, and we'll see what happens there. But this, I also worked for Sovereign Stable for 6 years, so Mike and Matt Gatzis owned both half-brothers to this filly, Funny Guy and Three Jokers. And so I called Matt Gatzis last night. I said, hey, you know, I'm very good friends with him yet. And I said, those two horses like the slop, right? And he goes, absolutely. So if it rains, maybe at least we have some kind of connection or some hope on that side for the first time in the mud. But we'll see. Chance of thunderstorms, but we'll see what happens.
Out of Heavenly Humor, so obviously Funny and Jokers and all comes around.
Exactly.
Rich, appreciate the visit. And again, I'll tell people to swing by the Adelphi Racing website. You can Google AdelphiRacing.com. Is that?
AdelphiRacing.com, yeah.
Okay. Yep. But again, thanks. You can Google it and find it. And as I say, I'm going to get Matt in here next week also to talk a little bit about it. Is it named after the hotel?
I don't. You know what? I know the racing club part of why he wants it to be more like a club, like you just said about people he wants to be around. That's his whole model. But I don't know about the Adelphi part. I should find that out.
I was just wondering, you know, just a Saratoga reference, I was wondering. But appreciate the visit. And
thanks,
again, good luck this afternoon and going forward. And glad to have you back in and even on a semi basis back in the game because you've been doing a great job over the years. And glad to have you back at the desk as
Thanks so much. It was great to be here.
Rich Cristiano, Adelphi Racing. We'll take a break. When we come back, Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. A little review and preview of Tom coming up. Stay tuned.
Juvenile Fillies Turf, 14 of them across the track. Leaders sent on their way. And the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eighth ball, they come. Stop shopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shopping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to the Friday edition of Racing Across America. Again, it's New York Showcase Day. We'll keep our fingers crossed on the... You can see behind me. Currently, it's gorgeous, but the forecast is a little dicey. We'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed, though. Tomorrow, it looks like it's going to be great for Traverse Day, and we'll talk a little bit about that and more with our next guest. Friday means a visit from the Saratoga Special, and this week it's our friend Tom Law. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Seth. It's been a while since I've been on. Had a
Looks
few
like
fill-ins,
and we had the interns swing by. They were great. You had to be happy with Tim and Spencer this year.
They did a phenomenal job. Worked hard. You know, showed up every time. Always very willing. Never a complaint, really. And you know what we really want to see throughout the summer from those guys and gals year in and year out is just for them to keep improving. And they did.
Yeah.
They answered the bell every time. Tim, especially towards the end, Spencer had to go back to school a week earlier than Tim did. He's working at Penn State and covering the football team. So probably on one of the last days when you had him on, he was getting ready to leave.
Yeah, he was leaving the next day.
And then it's just Tim. So it's like, all right, here's what I'm going to give you. And I mean, we put the word count in the paper the other day. He wrote 5,000 words like in one of the issues. That's like my level word counts. And he had a couple issues like that. Yeah. And the good thing about him is that he's actually done a lot of work in advance before he went back to Chicago, before he goes to Marquette. He's at Marquette now, I believe.
Yeah, he left Sunday.
Yeah, and he's already done some stuff for the Travers. He's got some stuff for Beyond, like a couple features that we need to run. We only got three papers left, so we'll get those in. But if you didn't know, you'd say, oh, that guy, he was there the whole summer. He's going to have some stuff in tomorrow's edition, which we're already... Fast and Furious working
and
on right now.
I was in the Winner's Circle yesterday. I saw Paul Halloran. And I said, hey, the B team, they called you when the interns left?
He said,
they got me in here.
No, he's A team for sure. Paul is, he's a godsend for us. You know, people ask all the time, how'd you get connected with him? I said, he popped his head in the office one day midway through the meet and said, hey, my name's Paul Halloran. I'm a sports writer. I'm not really a sports writer anymore, but I'm here a couple times a year with my buddies. If you guys ever need any help, let me know. So
bingo.
Yeah, like the next day he dropped off a resume and I kept it. I had it like in a folder, and we were talking, Joe and I were talking in the off season. We're like, we should get in touch with this guy and maybe he can help us out on some of those weekends. Like he's here, he's usually here Whitney weekend and Travers weekend. Just so happens to be our busiest weekends paper wise.
Yeah.
So, you know, with all the stakes and covering the stakes, and you know, I know when I can give Paul an assignment, I'm gonna get like good quality work, clean copy, and he knows racing. So there's no learning curve for him at all. I mean, he's a horse player, and you know, he does a great job. I didn't expect him until today, and then when he stopped in yesterday morning, I was like, yes, Paul is here. I was like, what are you doing this afternoon? We ended up with a bunch of stuff going on. Sean had a horse in yesterday, and we were up at the paddock for that.
Oh, I didn't realize the seventh race.
Yeah, he ran a horse named Saranac.
Okay.
In the River D stable, horse drew in from the also eligible list and kind of ran mid-pack in the mile and 3/16 turf race. So we were up there kind of showing support to Sean, who's back in town now after having to deal with some issues back home.
Yeah.
He's back, so that's good. We're full strength as far as...
Folks don't know, it was a barn fire.
Mm, yeah, so Sean had a fire at his farm.
Yeah,
historic barn on his farm in Virginia, Whitney morning.
Yeah.
Got a call from his wife and headed home after that. So he was gone close to 3 weeks, so... just kind of tending to all that. So he came up with the horse, and Daniel Hodgson's the trainer. They brought him up, vanned him up, and he came in the, you know, rode in the back of the pickup truck with them. And he's here, hopefully, for the duration.
Nice.
Yeah. Glad it's good to have him back. Yeah. You know, it's good to have.
And like I said, I saw Paul in the winter. So I think I saw him the Johnny Velasquez race, which that... That's what Saratoga is all about.
Oh,
you know, the racing is great, but the stories, and that was just a great story, John Velasquez, being, you know, the guy he is and kind of the symbol in the jocks colony and the mentor to the other, and all the jocks coming out and posing in the picture.
Very neat.
Was another one of the great Saratoga stories.
We've had some cool moments this year, you know, and that's right up there for sure. Winning for Bill Mott and Judd Mott, and then, of course, Leona leads the horse in, and, you know... How cool was that?
She and afterwards, the two of them are standing there looking at her phone, and she looks up. She goes, "It's our kids. They couldn't be here. We're FaceTiming."
Oh, okay, yeah. But luckily, Leo O'Brien and some of their other grandkids were there. That was cool. Very neat moment, you know. Just, you know, Johnny is, he needs no introduction, you know, his riding abilities, but, you know, all the things he does for the Guild and, like you said, on behalf of his colleagues is unmatched, really. I mean,
it was funny. He also... You know, obviously it was a big post-race interview, and he was saying, yeah, a couple of years ago, my wife's looking at the stats, and she's going, you know, you're getting close to 1,000 at Saratoga. You got to keep going. He's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Maybe I'm going to retire, maybe not. I'm not worried about the record. She's like, no, you got to keep going.
Yeah, we looked it up. I did a little, not a huge dive into the history, but, you know, Equibase has all the meet statistics all the way back to, I think, 2000 now, so that's pretty handy. Went back and we had generated a big long list, and then of course I made some mistakes going through it the first time, because some of them you had to look manually up from 1990 to 99, and I did it manually and I messed it up, and I was like, I got them for 1,005. This was last night after we were gassed, and then I was like, I'm just gonna put it away. I'm gonna do it in the morning. So I actually did it before I even went out to the backstretch this morning, and I was like, oh, I caught my errors, you know, like, and I got it down to it perfectly through 1,000. I mean, obviously it was 1,000. I don't think we would be promoting that if it was like, I mean, our record keeping in Thoroughbred Racing
could
be better.
Yeah, yes. I was about to say, it's not totally out of the question.
That's right.
I had Wayne Catalano in here the other day at the Sunday show, so Vic was there, and Vic referred to his total number of wins, and Catalano was like, whoa, and he had like 28 more, and Steve, I think, was looking at it, and he goes, well, where'd the 28 come from? And he's like, oh, I got... So, and I'm wondering, because he started in Louisiana.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, those 28 could be in somebody's backyard if it was in Louisiana.
Are those sanctioned races? You know, I mean,
that was the Wild West for a while down there.
Yeah.
So. But he had the number in his head, certainly. Yeah. Another story that you had in the special, speaking of 1,000, West Point as a partnership.
Yeah.
That's pretty good for a
partnership. Yeah, pretty cool.
1,000th win.
Amazing. You know, I mean, to think what they've been doing, and Terry, who I know you know very well, and You know, I thought an interesting number that he threw out was he said basically thought he had introduced close to 2,500 people to the game in one way or another, whether they're partners, breeders themselves now, owners themselves. You know, hats off for that, you know, and I think the partnerships like Rich you just had on and these guys that bring people into the game, the goal is to, you know, obviously their goal is to keep them as partners and to kind of keep their business running, but at the same time also good for the greater good of the of all of horse racing to keep people involved. I mean, the owners are, you know, the most important part. Owners and horse players really are neck and neck for the most important parts of the game.
Right over at the racetracks, the owners and the handicappers, the bettors, all important parts of
absolutely.
The pyramid, the triangle.
One of those shapes.
Go back to last weekend. We've been asking everybody this week. Nest certainly looked good. And you know, I said after I walked in the winner's circle, I said she sewed up the Eclipse.
Yeah.
And then that night I was thinking, you know, if she and Secret Oath faced off in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and Secret Oath won that, then I think potentially there's something up. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying potentially I could see the apple cart getting upset a little bit. But, boy, it's hard. It would be hard to get by her given what she's done so far, particularly up here.
True. I mean, now she's got the three grade ones for the year at two tracks, you know, Keeneland and Saratoga. If Secret Oath were to do what you said, I mean, she'd have the Kentucky Oaks
and the
Breeders' Cup Distaff at Keeneland, so that's two tracks as well. And the head-to-head would go down to 2-2. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, what do we do? And she's got the winner of the older. It would create some good drama for the Eclipse Awards. Some years we have kind of cut and dry.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of know what it's going to be, and you got to wait until almost February. But that'd be something. I'm looking forward to hopefully that happening. And, of course, Secret Oath's going to go to the Cotillion from what I understand. I'll be down there at Parks. I kind of get hired by Parks to help them with their publicity. So excited for that in September. We still got a ways to go before we can start thinking about that. But that'll be neat to have her down there. And, you know, Wayne, of course, he's having a heck of a meet up here, too.
Incredible.
Yeah, and she ran really well, I thought, in the Alabama Secret.
Oh, yeah, improved from the coaching club.
Yeah.
Because Ness was better.
Ness was so much better. Yeah. I mean, geez, she's unbelievable. You know, fun to watch. And I like looking at her. I like looking at pictures of her. I like watching the replays. I mean, she just pins those ears back.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of like, I'm going, you know. Like, you are not going to beat me. And, you know, sometimes horses, their ears are flicking forward and whatever. She just pins them back and it's just going.
Like aerodynamic.
Totally, yeah.
I'm going to slice through here.
She was aerodynamic the other day.
It was. She will be one of the highlights of the meet.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
But depending on what happens tomorrow, maybe another highlight on the three-year-old side, perhaps with the boys. Let's get some of your thoughts going to the Travers. You know, Epicenter comes out of the Jim Dandy, kind of having validated what I think everybody thought, despite the two finishes. I think everybody still thought, Epicenter maybe it's still at the top of the class. Kind of validated that in the Jim Dandy. But I talked to Brad Cox yesterday, and I saw him in the paddock. He likes the way Cyberknife is coming in. If you look at the Cyberknife record, the Derby and the LeCompte, Brad kind of thought those are throwouts. He had some excuses for those horses. Early voting, I'm going to be interested to see where the betting public goes.
Goes.
This is the Preakness winner at 8-1 on the morning line. It was a dud, so to speak, in the Jim Dandy. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a little rebound there. But what are your thoughts on the Travers?
Yeah, I mean, pretty bullish of Chad to come back with him in here, whereas, you know, he runs three. Certainly could have maybe waited, done something like the Pennsylvania Derby with him, but instead they go on with him. You know, the track was, you know, it was back then in the early part of the meet, you know, everybody was saying it was tiring, but he was in front, and a lot of times when you say the track is tiring, that might favor the horses in front because the ones trying to come from behind have to do a little bit more. You know, he hadn't run since the Preakness, and was matched up against Epicenter, who was really kind of razor sharp for that, who also hadn't run since the Preakness as well. Yeah, I mean, Epicenter is interesting because he's versatile, you know, and you wonder where he's going to be in the running of the race. The mile and a quarter is so much different than the mile and eight. I always find the pace, and they really start to separate themselves. And, you know, his races at Fairgrounds this winter were speed, close to the pace, but maybe he's just better than those horses. And then in the Derby, I mean, he's not very far off that very, very fast pace, and he's still there at the end.
Yeah.
That really showed his quality to me. You know, he's my pick, but Cyberknife is, you know, obviously very scary. He has an extra week as well. Brad has done a great job with him. Brad knows what he's doing. He needs no introduction, of course. But he had that extra week, and you know, he beats two pretty good horses in Taba and Jack Christopher, who we're going to see earlier in the card, and the Jerkins. In a good Haskell, fast. They ran fast.
I mean, Taba was making a winning move when Cyberknife came up the fence.
Yeah, and it's funny that the 7-2, what is he, 7-2, he's sort of under the radar a little bit. Brad Cox, he won the race last year. He's sort of a little bit under the radar, sort of, you know, but I guess the fact that Rich Strike is here and early voting is here, interesting that the Derby and the Preakness winners, they're both kind of under the radar.
Yeah.
When does that ever happen in the Travers, you know? And of course, you got Zandon in there as well from the outside, and then Artorias, who's definitely a late blooming horse for Judmont by Arrogate. We all know what Arrogate did here a few years ago, blew the doors off the Travers and set the track record. And, you know, I don't know they're going to set the track record this year. The times have been not as fast, but I think it's a really strong Travers.
Yeah,
I'm glad they got eight. We missed out on having Charge It. That would have been cool.
Disappointment.
And he would have been a real X factor. He would have been kind of like, okay, he hasn't run in a long time. He's coming off that big win. He's coming in here. He's bred for it. Let's see what he can do. But I guess they're going Pennsylvania Derby with him.
I had Todd in here yesterday, and it depends on how the hoof heals up. That the little abscess that just made him miss this race.
Yeah.
And you could tell he was disappointed.
I bet.
Off of that big win in the Dwyer.
Yeah.
Charge It was going to be intriguing. Yeah. And, yeah, Rich Strike, it's working very well. But
yeah.
It just seems like in the morning he always does that. I could not quite pull the trigger tomorrow.
I can't. No, I mean, you know, it'd be a heck of a story, wouldn't it?
Yes.
we would, you know, we always say at the special, let's root for chaos, you know. trying to find different story angles. I mean, I covered him at the Derby, and I just thought, you know, I'd seen it all when I did that.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be as big a shock, obviously, in here, but like I said, that mile and a quarter sometimes, it separates a little bit. You know, we'll see. I mean, he obviously benefited from that pace in the Derby. You know, I mean, he never see that
and
again.
And also, you watch that overhead shot.
Yeah.
Leon makes every right move. It was just, that's an incredible.
Yeah.
And I think the last time I saw, there was like a million views of that overhead shot, because I think everybody's like, oh, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I had people that are not even, they're sort of casual racing fans, and they're like sending it to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've seen it. I was there. But I'm like, so it resonates, you know. It was cool. He did everything right. And it's a neat story. And he's here. I'm glad he's going to be here tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
To ride. And that horse will have a lot of people be cheering for him, I think. You know, I mean, the lovable long shot, I guess. And, you know, the underdog, a kind of a neat story. But he's been here, I guess, so he's been doing well.
He works fabulous.
Yeah.
Lights out. But he did that before the Belmont, too. So
that's
a little bit earlier. And again, a card full of, as has been the meat, really, a card full of stars. Let's go to the personal Ensign some thoughts there. Race number 9 on the card tomorrow. It's only a 5-horse field, but Clairiere, Malathat, Latruska, Search Results.
Yeah.
I've just been a big fan of Clairiere right along.
Yeah.
I went back to her after the Shoe V. But again, we had Todd in yesterday. He said right after the Shoe V where she ran second, if folks don't remember, well, it's been the whole meet. But that was during that particularly hot period.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was a little lethargic in the paddock. And so he's kind of looking for a rebound. And Latruska, the defending champion, you know, off the race last time, but off the race 2 back, the Apple Blossom.
Yeah.
5-horse field, again, really interesting. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you mentioned the Shoe V. Latruska won the Shoe V
here
a couple of years ago, won the Personal Ensign last year. You know, she's obviously the pace of the race and really folded up the tent there in the Phipps last time. You know, basically eased after she was kind of out of the race. It was very fast pace that day. I'm anxious to see what she does. You know, how can you say the champion mare from last year is an X factor? But she kind of is.
Yeah,
I mean, she hasn't run since that race. A lot of really good works down at Churchill, coming back for this. Clearly a horse that likes Saratoga. Like, she's run here 3 times, and the one time she was off the board, she was like 5th, I think, in the Ballerina. And a really good Ballerina. But
I just like to see her run well, because she's a 6-year-old who they brought back as a 6-year-old, and I'd like to see her rebound and kind of validate their confidence.
Yeah, I haven't totally finished my picks for tomorrow. I'm almost tempted to pick her.
Mm-hmm.
Just because Lone Speed, like I said, maybe the tire and track. But Search Results could certainly be in there with her. You know, and I like the route that they did with her. Rather than go to the Shoe V, Chad said, all right, let's go to the Molly Pitcher. Gets the win down there. Easier spot, obviously, than going in the against Clairiere and Malathat. You know, Malathat was interesting, like you said. Todd did talk about how she was flat. You know, it was very hot that day. Saw some pictures of her. Todd Marks, our photographer, was shooting her in schooling yesterday. She was not flat the other day in the paddock. She was rearing up and feeling good. So, you know, hopefully.
That bodes well.
Yeah. It's been a little warm lately, though, too, so I don't know. Not like it was. I mean, but that was this is some race. I mean, five horses in here. People are like, oh, the short fields, they're complaining about that. I'm like, well, who else would you want?
Exactly.
There's no one else that you would want in here.
And just before we go, I'll just toss out a couple other names worth watching tomorrow.
Sure.
And get your thoughts. Jack Christopher on the cutback after the disappointment in the Haskell, and Jackie's Warrior runs again tomorrow. And looking forward to both of those just to see what Jack Christopher can rebound. Just going to step back and watch Jackie's Warrior.
Oh, Jackie.
He's a fan.
He's cool, isn't he? I mean, 5 for 5. He's going to try to win another grade one at Saratoga. You know, he lays over this field on paper. He lays over this field on class, what he's done. You know, I really like him, and I like how Asmussen has a lot of respect for the horse. And that's what I really like about him as a trainer. He respects the game. He respects fast, talented horses, and he gets it. You know, to me, he's what racing's all about. And Jack, he's cool, you know. I mean, I remember watching him up here as a two-year-old, right, in pandemic year and all that, and he's ripping through those stakes up here. You and I were here. And then Jack Christopher, you know, rebound. He's third. He got beat 2 lengths. Not like a bad race at all.
No.
You know, if you really like Cyberknife and the Travers, you know, how could you really knock him? He's going 1 mile and 1/8. They went fast. It was a fast race, and he only got beat 2. He's run well here, obviously won here. 7/8 is right up his wheelhouse, is Woody Stevens. If he's able to run back to that, it's going to be trouble for the rest. I'm not counting out Gunite, speaking of Steve.
I have him right underneath.
He could be a prize. Yeah. He's 6-1 on the line.
I didn't use him last time, but I'm not letting him get away this time.
No, I know. I foolishly did not pick him. And the horse Conaher that drew the rail, you know, he beat Gunite. Yes. That was a comeback race, obviously, but that horse is fast, and he's from the rail. Spent some time with him and Mike Tomlinson this morning. Had a good time with that little teaser for preview for tomorrow. You know, he's a neat horse, and that was a good race he ran last time at Colonial. The horse that was second is a nice horse in there. So he's a real capable race a horse. That's a strong race, as it always is. Yeah. You know, I mean, that race has become, you know, a really marquee event for sure. Yeah. Used to be old King's Bishop, you know, it was just kind of like a little warm-up to the Travers, you know. Now it's part of this grade one spectacular that we
have. Because essentially they've now made those kind of two different divisions.
Yeah, for sure.
On the three-year-old side. Yeah. So. Tom, appreciate it. Oh, we should mention, because I was looking at the hard copy. The stable tour. Before you go, I'm going to mention that too.
Yep.
But this Ladies Stable Tour Barkley Tag, that was fun.
How good was that? Joe went out there, and Joe and Sean, their family has known Barkley for years. You know, I think Joe's dad and Barkley, you know, came up together and around that time, steeplechase history and that. And Joe and Rob and Smullen they dig right into the horses and gave him so much time and so much information. I mean, like, we wish they could all be like that, you know. It's amazing. And they know their horses really well, and again, got people that really respect their horses and kind of and do the right thing by them. Amazing stuff that was in there. I was looking at it today when I was handicapped. I was like, ooh, Barkley Tag's got a few horses in. What were they saying about this horse? So there's a few runners tomorrow that were in the stable tour. So got a good one planned for tomorrow. So it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There'll be another hard copy out tomorrow. And again,
that's
if you didn't get to see the hard copy with the Barkley Tag, Robin Smullen's Barn Tour, you can always catch it online. This is horseracing.com. Type in Saratoga Special in Google. You'll find it that way, too. But you can always catch it online. You can catch the hard copy here at the track, around town as well. Always touted. And, I wasn't going to let you go without mentioning. You're pulling away from me. Serpazian, because yesterday and the day before, I was treading water a little bit. Yeah. I needed that, which I didn't think I won, that photo in the last race.
I know.
That got me one for yesterday.
I did, too, with that one. Yeah.
And watching live, I thought, oh, I think I got it.
Yeah.
And then on the replay, I thought, oh, I'm not even close. Yeah. I thought it was like a nose. And then they put it up. I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
because I haven't had a whiff yet. So.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I don't think I have either. Despite a 3 for opening weekend start, sent me in a hole. I'm 5 down to Shabazian. He's 102. I'm 97 coming in. I thought I was going to get him by one yesterday. He ended up getting one back.
I'm 93, so okay. you guys have opened a little bit on me, but I'll hope for a big weekend and kind of see if I can make it a horse race as we get into the last week. But it's always a lot of fun, and highly recommend it. Again, you pick up the paper to follow the handicappers as well, particularly Mr. Shapazian, who I run into often when I'm walking over, coming by in the convertible. And,
and
I get the wave.
He's the man.
Yeah. Tom, appreciate the visit. As always, highly recommended Saratoga special. Pick it up again on track, around town, or online as well. Appreciate the visit.
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth.
All right. We'll wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Been a fun morning here. It is starting to cloud over a little bit now. And again, keep in mind that they're predicting a little bit of weather. So if you are coming up to the track, I'm not going to discourage you at all because I think it's a great race car. New York Showcase Day. But maybe put one of those little collapsible umbrellas in the bag to bring up with you today, just in case. And again, we'll keep our fingers crossed. You can also, of course, enjoy racing at the Clubhouse Racebook down in Albany or the other branches, or fire up Capital OTB Bet on your phone or your computer or whatnot and play from your couch at home. We'll have great racing here on the network all afternoon. As far as tomorrow, it's Travers Day, and with an early post time, we'll kick off early as well. Handicappers Report will be at 8 o'clock. Racing Across America will be at 9 o'clock tomorrow, so keep that in mind. Do note that programming change for tomorrow. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up for this Friday. I think we've covered everything. Appreciate your tuning in as always. Good luck this afternoon. Again, early start tomorrow, 8 a.m. for the Handicappers Report. We'll see you then.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on!
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.